Welcome to Behind the Latch, inspiration and evidence for lactation professionals. Whether you're a new lactation consultant, a seasoned professional, continued learning is essential for staying up to date and providing evidence. I'll bring you expert interviews, research recaps, and case studies to help you refine your skills and elevate your practice. No matter where you are in your IBCLC journey, this podcast is for you. Welcome back to Behind the Latch. I'm Margaret Salty, your host, and today I'm joined by Christina Chamberlain, nurse midwife in IBCLC, for an in-depth conversation about what true mentorship in lactation looks like. Christina brings her perspective as a clinician, educator, and leader in lactation education to unpack the difference between supervising hours and actively mentoring students. Together, we explore why mentorship is a professional responsibility, how hands-on teaching builds confident IBCLCs, and what it really takes to support students moving from coursework into real-world clinical care. Let's jump in. Are you studying for the IBCLC exam but feel completely overwhelmed by how to study? You're not alone. Most aspiring IBCLCs spend months buying practice exams, rereading textbooks, and guessing what to focus on without any real strategy. That's exactly why I created Lactation Exam Mastery. This isn't just another set of practice questions. It's a complete strategy that teaches you how the IBCLC exam actually works, how to think through tricky questions, how to avoid the most common mistakes, and how to walk into test day confident and prepared. Don't let exam strategy be the thing that holds you back. The Lactation Exam Mastery course is just $37. You've already done the hard work. Now get the strategy to match it. Start the Lactation Exam Mastery course today. Learn more at margaretsalty.com/exammastery.
The National Lactation Consultant Alliance advocates for safe, equitable clinical lactation care and works to ensure families have access to the skilled clinical lactation care of an international board-certified lactation consultant. NOCA advocates for the IBCLC at the state, federal, and national levels with legislators, policymakers, agencies, insurers, and organizations. NOCA's Center for Lactation Equity works to build a more inclusive and diverse lactation workforce through advocacy and scholarship opportunities. Check out NOCA's publications and newsletters and our newest scholarship opportunity. Whether you're a practicing IBCLC, a student, or a NOCA ally, NOCA is here for you. Learn more, become an ally, subscribe to our complimentary newsletter, and connect with us at nlca.us. Together, we can elevate the IBCLC profession and ensure that every family receives the compassionate, evidence-based clinical lactation care they deserve.
All right. Welcome, Christina.
Hi. Thank you for having me.
Of course. This is a long time coming. I'm very excited to talk to you about this topic that we are both passionate about. Before we get into that, let's start by telling everybody where you're located and what work you're currently doing.
Sure. So I am actually located in Seattle, Washington, which is a little odd because I work for UC San Diego. And so my role has always been a remote role. So that's why it's able to work that way. UC San Diego, I am the clinical director and lead faculty. So I kind of oversee the lactation programs, all the courses that we have in terms of curriculum and design. And then I do work in my local area, in the Seattle area. I do work in a freestanding, it's a private breastfeeding medicine clinic just a little bit north of Seattle. And I work there weekly.
And you are not just a lactation consultant. You also have a few other hats. So tell us what those are.
So I'm licensed as a certified nurse midwife and a women's health nurse practitioner. And I did work in those spaces for a while, but it was not an expected thing to become into lactation. I thought I was going to do something completely different in women's health. But once I got into it and was working in the birth world, it just became really clear that there's a lot going on prenatally, a lot going on with the birth, not a lot going on postpartum. in terms of support or resources or education or all of the above. And so it just kind of made me feel like this is an area that needs to, I'm a fixer. So it was like, this is an area I need to fix in my own little world. And that's kind of how I got into lactation.
Yeah, that's awesome. Did you have any experiences with lactation consultants with your own kids that you were like, oh, I really like this, or oh, I never want one of those?
Well, I actually became an IBCLC, I think I was like 6 or 8 weeks pregnant with my first.
Oh my goodness. All right.
So actually, to be honest, it was the flip side. I had a lot of issues, a lot of challenges with my first. And to be honest, felt a little shy about asking for help because I thought I was supposed to be the expert. Mm-hmm. And also, I didn't feel like there were, I had wonderful lactation consultants, but my daughter ended up being tongue-tied and she's going to be 20 next week. And so there weren't a lot of people talking about that back then. And even though I knew about it, there was nobody who was like confirming what I thought. So then it was like, well, do I really know what I'm thinking? Or there weren't people who were correcting that I could go to who are really knowledgeable on breastfeeding issues as well. So, yeah. So I did have a lot of challenges and that definitely made me, I think, more committed to what I was doing. But my personal experience is not what drove me here. Mostly it was my clinical experience of what I was seeing as a midwife and working in hospitals and that sort of thing.
Yeah. Oh, well, that's awesome. So we are going to talk about mentorship today because this is such an important topic. Our field is exploding. I mean, it seems like every year more and more people are sitting for the exam and trying to become IBCLCs. So for those listening that are not clear, there are three pathways to become an IBCLC. And what distinguishes those three pathways is the clinical experience, the number of hours that you need for your clinical experience to be eligible to sit for the exam. So for all three pathways, the education requirement is the same, but the clinical experience is different. So for pathway one, that is typically somebody that works at the bedside, so a bedside nurse, something like that. And they can use their hours working at the bedside to collect those internship hours, and they need 1,000 hours within 5 years. Pathway two, it's kind of bundled education and clinical experience and affiliated with higher education, and they need 300 hours. And pathway three is a direct mentorship. So you get your education hours on your own, and then you find a mentor to work with to get those hours, and you need 500 direct clinical hours within 5 years. So what we are going to talk about today is really pathway two and pathway three mentorship. So what does effective mentorship in lactation actually look like in practice, and how is it different from simply supervising hours or signing off on paperwork?
To me, lactation mentoring, the key difference is you're really engaged in the learning. Teaching / learning. You're participating in that experience for your mentee or your intern or your student, whatever word we want to call. When you're supervising, that's very passive. Like that person is off on their own doing their own thing. And I'm just going, yep, I'm checking off that actually happened. But when you're mentoring, you're really kind of shaping, guiding, molding, teaching. And so it's more of an engagement. It's more of a relationship. I think when you are a preceptor or a mentor, you're fostering this relationship just like you would with any of your clients. And I always tell people, like, today you might be my intern, but tomorrow you're going to be my colleague. And I think that is really important for both the mentor and the mentee to remember.
Yes.
But the lactation community is very small, no matter where you live. And one day we're all going to need colleagues in the same situation. So I think that's really the biggest difference between mentoring and supervising. I think also with mentoring, you're not just teaching somebody the clinical stuff, but you're really modeling what the role of a lactation consultant is. So you're modeling the profession, you're modeling how to be professional. So it's more than just, you know, you have to have this clinical, you have to know how to make a feeding plan or calculate volume. You're kind of modeling communication skills, kind of fostering relationships and helping the client, the mentee learn how to foster those relationships. So it's a much broader, I think, educational experience when you're a mentor than just like teaching a class.
Yeah. So let's talk a little bit about the nuts and bolts of what's actually required for a mentor, because I think, you know, maybe there are lactation consultants listening to this that might be interested in mentorship, but they really have no idea what that actually includes. And it's similar, but a little bit different for pathway two and pathway three. So what is actually the requirement for an IBCLC that wants to be a mentor?
Right now, the only requirement is that they are an IBCLC in good standing, that they have an active certification and that they're in good standing with IBLC. It used to be back in the day that there was a requirement that they had to be an IBCLC, I think for 5 years.
Well, yeah, that's certified at least one time, I think.
It was 5 years, yeah. But they took away that requirement, I'm sure because it's already hard enough to find it.
Right.
So that was kind of taking away one barrier. So now, honestly, that's the only requirement. Usually when I talk to people who are thinking about it or nervous to do it, the barriers that they put on are their own. Like they're creating their own requirements that they feel like.
Yeah, that's the requirement to get in. But what does a mentor actually have to do?
Yeah. So the mentor has to, one, welcome the intern or the mentee into their visits. And by that, they have to also have a sense of comfort in allowing the intern to participate. So they can't just be this fly on the wall observing in the shadows. They have to actually be there communicating with the clients, hands-on with the clients. And I think that's where a lot of people get nervous is like, well, I don't know this person. I don't know what their skills are. Of course not. Just you're again, it's a relationship. So you're getting to know the mentee. And so I always talk about it in terms of you're going to start your mentee doing a small thing, a small part of the visit. And then as you trust their skills and they develop those skills, then you're going to add on more and more and more till eventually, hopefully they're almost, they're independent.
Yeah. Well, I think another thing that's important to say is that the mentee is not going to be hands-on day one.
Sure.
The mentor is going to go through some visits, maybe a week, maybe several weeks of showing this is the flow. This is how I do it. This is how I do it. This is how I weigh a baby and then sort of transition into it. And what's important for these mentors to understand is that they don't start signing off on hours when there's just observation. It's not until the mentee starts putting their hands on the patient or doing some of the work themselves that they start counting hours. So this should be expected that there is a period of time that is just observation for everybody to kind of get to know each other.
Agreed. And I also think that, like to your point, they're not doing everything all at once. So like, for example, I work outpatient. So usually what I start off is when I feel like they're done kind of watching me, observing, like you're saying, is the first thing I do is teach them how to use the infant scale. And their job is to weigh the baby. So I will, you know, once they have permission from the parent to touch the baby and undress the baby, then they'll undress, they'll do a naked weight, they'll do a before and an after weight. And really that's to get them engaged somehow in the visit. Mm-hmm. It's also to get them comfortable touching the baby. Right. It teaches them they have to ask for permission before they can touch the client, whether it's baby or mom. So just in that one little act, they're already doing a lot of the things that they're going to have to do as a lactation consultant. It's kind of getting them into that mindset. And then they're going to start having to do the math. They're going to do a pre and post weight. And does this make sense? How much did this baby take? They're going to do a naked weight. And then you're going to ask them how much is a weight gain or a weight loss? So that's the way you just add one little thing, but it actually blossoms into all of these skills that they're going to get from that one little thing.
Yeah, absolutely. What tools has IBLC created to help a mentor to understand sort of what items need to be covered or what should they try to achieve in their mentorship time? I mean, I think about really type A people and they probably want a checklist of, okay, we need to make sure we go down and meet all of these things. So can you talk about what sort of tools and support IBLC has for this?
IBLC provides the detailed outline, which is actually a fairly like high level list of topics that are on the exam. So it's not super detailed. They're pretty broad. But that's a good starting point to just to kind of help kind of guide what the clinical experience might be. I think a better tool to help with that is what LARC provides. So I another hat I wear is I'm on the board of LARC, which is the Lactation Education Approval and Accreditation Review Committee. And basically, that's the third wheel of our profession, where they're the ones who create the standards for lactation education. So LARC has created a checklist which has very specific skills under those more general detailed outline topics. And I think that's a great tool for mentees to use. It helps them go, oh, I do need to actually know how to do this. But it also helps the mentors, again, guide the visits and the clinical experience that they have to offer. For example, if you're working in a hospital, they can look at that and go, oh, you're supposed to know how to work with twins, and we happen to have twins up in the NICU right now, or something like that. So they it helps, I think, kind of focus on guiding their what the internship is going to look like.
Yeah. And is that available to any mentor that
It is on the LARC website, so I can give you that link and you can.
Yeah, we'll put that in the show notes.
Yeah,
I think that would be helpful. So at UCSD, you have students that come from all over the world, really, but you work a lot with local sites in individual cities to help place students who want an in-person internship. And when you do that, you provide some support to that mentor. So can you talk a little bit about that support and kind of how that differs from what a mentor would have to do on their own to support a Pathway 3 intern?
Yeah, so I'm just speaking of the UCSD program specifically, but I will tell you that Pathway 2, the definition is Pathway 2s have to be accredited in a university or college. So I'm guessing most Pathway 2 programs have something like this for their preceptors, and we call them preceptors rather than mentors in the Pathway 2 program. But what our program does is we provide, I mean, I'm always in contact with them either by email or Zoom or texting or calls. So if there is a concern or if they have questions, I'm always available. But one of the things that we provide is a monthly meeting where the preceptors can come. It's just preceptors and instructors. We meet to talk about new research, but part of that meeting at the beginning is we go over interns' progress. Does anybody have any questions, any troubleshooting that we need to go through? Like some of the things that have come up in the past is one preceptor was kind of struggling because her intern was really shy, kind of quiet, not very confident. And so it was really hard for the preceptor to get her to like be hands-on and be more assertive with the client and kind of take on more of a independent role. So we kind of talked through that. Other issues are just logistics, like the student keeps coming late and it's not okay at my clinic. And so it can vary from both ends of the spectrum, I think.
The other type of support that I'm referring to is the agreement and the liability.
So with the Pathway 2 programs, part of our accredited requirement is that we have to have an affiliation agreement between the school and the clinical site. And that's basically, it's a contract that's pretty standard for any clinical, like nursing program or anything like that, where it's pretty much spelling out who's responsible if something goes awry. But it does help to protect the school and the clinical practice or the facility. Our students are all covered under a malpractice insurance policy that UCSD has for student lactation consultants. So that's something that we provide as well. Usually I will say that if the mentor is interested and they're kind of concerned about liability or any legal issues, those are the two documents that will help hopefully alleviate some of that.
Right.
Yeah.
And you do this, whether it is, say, a hospital site or a clinic or an independent private practice lactation consultant, correct?
Yes. An affiliation agreement has to be with everybody. The difference is how easy it is to get a signature. Yep. Usually with a private practice, we're just dealing with one person. With a hospital, we have layers.
Yeah. And then another thing is that you do the health and background check and the vaccinations for the students, which, it, you know, somebody in Pathway 3 would have to be responsible for doing that themselves.
Yeah, so the students do have to do it themselves, but we help them know what they need. And we have a third party platform where the students upload all of that, because that's what the clinical sites will look at in terms. A lot of the hospitals have access to that third party platform. So, and it's basically like background check, drug test, immunization, those types of things.
Yeah, I just meant like a mentor in Pathway 3 would have to figure out how to verify all of that on their own.
Yeah.
You do it for them. So that can be really helpful.
I'll just say along this line. So even though the Pathway 2 programs usually kind of have all of this set up, for the Pathway 3 mentor, it might be a little bit more in terms of looking into how to get all of these things done, but it's not. LARC, again, does have a sample of that contract, the affiliation agreement, on their website. So they can certainly just get the boilerplate template of a contract if they wanted that. They could create something themselves. I mean, I know some private practices out there will have their own agreement with mentees in terms of like protecting their practice with competition and, private information. So, I mean, LARC does provide some guidance with that if somebody's creating their own. And there's also a great book, and that helped me a lot when I was first kind of revamping UCSD's program in terms, but it's got a lot of sample documents. So this is a really great book, Clinical Instruction in Lactation, and it's Phyllis Kumble, Linda Kuettner, and Jan Barger. It's actually a few years old. I mean, it's not a new book, but it's really helpful. It has a lot. I mean, you can see I've got a lot of little bookmarks and stuff, but it's got sample documents.
Awesome.
So this is a great resource if somebody really, truly is starting from scratch or they want to kind of create their own Pathway 3 mentorship.
Mm-hmm. So let's talk a little bit about the mentees for a second. What are the biggest gaps lactation students face when transitioning from coursework to real world clinical work? And how can mentors help to bridge that gap?
The biggest thing I see is even when people do have an in-person clinical site or an in-person mentor, they still are not always getting hands-on experiences. Mm-hmm. And I think part of that is because the mentor is nervous to have this student, basically this inexperienced person, touch their clients, especially if they're in private practice. I think that the fear is, you know, I'm building my brand and I don't know who this person is, or I don't know what their skill set is. So we often have students who will say, like, my preceptor doesn't do oral exams on babies, or I've only seen follow-ups and she did it at the initial visit. So now that it's a follow-up, she's not going to do one. Mm-hmm. So then the student misses out on that opportunity. Mm-hmm. And so I would encourage, like what I do, even if I didn't think the parent needed a breast exam, I'll say, do you mind if my student does a breast exam? And, you know, we get her permission, but that's, you have a captured audience. This is the perfect time to do that. So I try to ask all of my clients, breast exam, oral exam, can we do it? And I try to get my student in there. So I think that mentors just, either they don't think about it because it's not in their flow, or they're nervous to let the student touch their client. But that's what needs to happen. That's the only way people are going to learn.
Do you think that working with more than one mentor can be valuable?
Yes, definitely. Because I think not only are you going to maybe learn, somebody says something differently, somebody does something differently, but you learn different styles.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I always say that amongst in our program, like we're all very good at our job, but we're very different and we have very different styles. And so I think it's great for people to be exposed to different styles.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. So talking to the potential mentors out there, they may want to help, but they kind of feel overwhelmed or unsure, even though we just told them about a ton of tools that are available. And I also will link my free mentorship course in the show notes here. What advice would you give IBCLCs who are thinking about maybe taking that on in the future, but don't know where to start or worried that they're not ready? Maybe they, you know, they're only been a lactation consultant for 1 or 2 years and they feel like, I don't know if I have enough experience yet.
Well, the first thing I would say is if you already got all your hours that you had to be eligible to sit for the exam and you actually pass the exam, you know more than you're giving yourself credit for. Mm-hmm. You have more experience and you're probably giving yourself credit. So I would say that for sure. And you certainly know more than this mentee who's trying to get where you are. But I also think that there is a lot of benefits to being a mentor that people don't think about. And some of those are that, I mean, it's definitely, I always start by asking if somebody's hemming and hawing, I always say, how did you get your hours?
Yeah.
Because to be honest, I think being a preceptor or a mentor is our professional obligation. It is written in our ethics code that we are going to expand or pursue the profession of lactation consultant. And this is one way that we can do that to uphold yes. that. And so I do think it is our professional obligation. So I always go back to people like, how did you get your hours? Like, you need to pay it forward, pay it back, however you think of it. The other thing I think is it does, I think, provide a lot of professional satisfaction. Mm-hmm. I mean, I definitely get a lot out of teaching students. Just me personally makes me feel good. It also keeps me up to date. Mm-hmm. You know, when the new mastitis protocol came out, a lot of our interns were teaching their preceptors about the new protocol. They had never heard of it. So it definitely helps keep me up to date. You get free SERPs. I mean, our program gives our preceptors free SERPs through our program, but IBLC in and of itself will provide some free SERPs for anybody who's doing pathway 2 or 3 mentor.
Yeah, that's right.
If you're in private practice or sometimes even hospitals, I think that having interns or mentees can be a pipeline for hiring.
Yes.
Practice, if you want to expand your practice, if you're a hospital and you're looking to hire new people, I think if you are patient, you really train your person well, it can make your job easier. I mean, I have a mentee right now, and she's at the point where she can do a lot of the visit on her own. I'm in the room and I'm basically her scribe.
Nice.
That has cut down on the time I need at the end of the day to chart.
Nice. Yes.
So I think that's really a great way to use them. And I also think that, you know, even if this person isn't experienced in lactation, they're an adult, they have a world of experience. Mm-hmm. They can provide other things. We had one intern who didn't come from a healthcare background, but she was really knowledgeable in social media and she had experience in creating content. And that's what she did for her preceptor, is she worked on her website, her Instagram presence, and that was a great win-win. So I think that, you know, your mentees can also provide non-lactation benefits as well to your practice.
Yeah, definitely. I'll say when I first started being a mentor, I realized that I had worked for many, many years with people that had been lactation consultants for a dozen years or so. And, you know, I kind of slipped into the habit of what I had learned working in the hospital of, well, this is just how we do it. So when I became a mentor myself, I was like, well, that's not good enough. I need to understand why that's what we say. Why is that why we do it? And it really has helped me grow so much in that regard, because I can't get away with just saying that's why we do it. I need to be able to understand enough to explain to my students so they can understand. And the other thing I'll say is, you know, I worked in the hospital for 10 years. So there's a little bit of like, you're kind of insulated when you're in the hospital. Like, you work your 8 or 12 hour shift and then you go home, and you're not, at least for me and a lot of lactation consultants I knew, we weren't super involved in the breastfeeding community at large because we were kind of burnt out by working in the hospital, right? So keeping up to date with evidence, being involved in coalitions and things like that was just not on our radar. So when I started mentoring, when I was outside of the hospital and I started learning about these tiny flanges and all of that, it was the students that taught me about that. And I'm like, all right, well, I got to go do some learning here to understand what's happening, because I was so insulated in it from it in the hospital. You know, we only had what came with the pumps, and we just did it the way we had always done it. And so I think it can be such a good experience if you're open to learning something new and learning, you know, a new way of doing things. You can learn so much from that experience. It can be really beneficial to you and the student.
Yeah, I agree. It certainly makes me a better provider having, because they keep me on my toes and they'll say, wait, you said this, but I read something different in our textbook or something like that. Mm-hmm. So like you said, you have to really know why you're doing something and be able to explain it. You're saying, like, how do people who think they might not be ready? The other thing is I would say is, I think another reason people are hesitant to start is because they think they have to be the perfect mentor. They have to, you know, and I really strongly believe there is no such thing as perfection. And if we wait until we're perfect or until it's the perfect time, it'll never happen. Yeah. So I would encourage people, if they are kind of thinking about doing it, is like, just hone in on your strengths, whatever those are. Yeah. We all have strengths. And just focus on that. Like, well, I'm really good at charting. And I know that I can teach charting, if nothing else. Like, I can get somebody in and or whatever that is. And maybe focus on, well, what is unique to your practice? You know, are you the person that everybody goes to when there's like, yeah, exclusive pumpers or something like that? Right. Like, that's value that you can teach this IBCLC wannabe. So focusing on what your strengths are and what you can provide versus your deficiencies or what you think.
Absolutely. So something that I know is a hot topic online, at least in some of the Facebook groups, is that there are people out there and certain companies out there that charge for a mentorship, at least for Pathway 3. Do you think that charging for mentorship is appropriate or necessary? What's your stance on that?
Well, I mean, that's definitely a loaded question because I can see both sides of it. When I had a private practice, I never said no and I never charged. Mm-hmm. But that's because I could do that. And because I love teaching and I felt strongly about providing these opportunities. And also, I liked having the help, to be honest. Mm-hmm. It was a way for me to get some help in the clinic. I think in a perfect world, we would be paid for our time as a preceptor. Mm-hmm. And I think that this is a much bigger issue where when people aren't paid for their time, it's because we're in a female-dominated profession and women don't often ask for their value and in payment. Or it's a privileged profession where my partner's paying our bills, so I can afford to, you know, just offer anybody free training.
Right.
And that's not always the case. So I understand why people would charge. And I don't think that that's necessarily a bad thing, as long as it's fair. And it is going to create another barrier. I mean, that's just the reality. It is going to create another barrier for somebody who wants to be an IBCLC.
Mm-hmm.
So I would just say, try to be as fair as possible. It's not necessarily a money maker for your practice, but it is going to pay your value for that time. Yes. And I would also say, that's a hard one because I get told no a lot. People don't want to be a priest. They don't have time.
It is going to, in the beginning, it's going to take longer to do the debrief after a visit. Your charting is going to take longer because you're going through all the whys and the ifs and all the nuts and bolts. But as you progress through this mentorship, it's going to get quicker, just like you said. They're doing the work. You're doing the scribe. Yeah. So it is going to take longer in the beginning. So yes, it takes more of your time. And maybe you do feel like you need to get compensated for that. But in the long run, so maybe a happy medium is, if there isn't a money exchange, maybe there can be some other value exchange. Maybe they do some cleaning at your office, or maybe they do the social media, or maybe they help with some other sort of administrative task to take a little bit of load off of you because of what you're giving to them.
Yes. And I definitely heard of some practices doing that, which I think is a great idea. I think what I've also heard some practices who have like a Pathway 3 program that I kind of question is like, I'm going to train you and you're going to work for me free later. Like that, I feel like we're kind of, once you're an IBCLC and you're working, I feel like people should get paid for sure.
Yeah.
And so I'm not sure I agree with having people kind of do this unpaid internship after they've passed the exam at some point. Yeah. That's the only thing I feel is a little iffy, but I do see why people would charge to be a mentor.
Yeah, I agree. So we've sort of talked about this, but let's just clarify. What responsibilities do you believe that mentors have, not just to students, but to families, the profession, and themselves?
Well, I think as a mentor, our responsibility is to be really honest with what our limits are. That's, I would say, limits in my knowledge. If I don't know something, I have to be honest and say, I don't know it. Let's go look it up. So I don't want to, even if that's embarrassing in front of a family or in front of a student, like I have to just own up what I know or don't know.
Mm-hmm.
I think we also need to be really clear on what our limits are with our, boundaries, you know, with especially this is especially for people in private practice. When you see your clients, you're 100% there seeing your clients. And when you're not, you're 100% doing something else in your life.
Right.
And I think that that is part of role modeling for the mentees. You know, we're role modeling this, these good boundaries. But I think that's really important. That's a responsibility we have to ourselves and also to our families to say, like, we have boundaries. I think for families, yeah, it's just, I think for families too, if you're going to have a student, it's really important to be honest about, like, this is a student. Mm-hmm. I've seen some practices where they'll make up names like IBCLC in training or, you know, they just kind of make up these titles for them. And it's like, we just need to let these families know what they're getting. I don't think there's anything wrong with a student. I think having, I always tell people it's two for the price of one. You're getting me and my student.
Yeah.
And sometimes my families really connect with the students and they love them. There's nothing, I think, to be ashamed of. That person's not an IBCLC yet, but she is working towards it and will be one day. And I think we need to maintain honesty with that.
All right. Last question. If you could redesign the way lactation mentorship is approached or valued in our profession, what would you change? And what do you hope the future of mentorship looks like?
Would love to create incentives that make everybody excited to be a mentor. So this is a perfect world. I don't have all the how are we going to do this answered yet. But I think one is, first of all, I think in our profession, we should be focusing on training mentors. Like when I go to conferences or if I'm looking for STERPs, really there's nothing that talk about how to train people to be mentors or preceptors. It doesn't make sense. We want more preceptors. We want to break down barriers for people to get their hours so that they can become IBCLCs, but we have no avenue for making those two things happen.
Right. Right.
Exactly. I think adding some of the, making this a priority in our conferences or in webinars, I think that's important. You know, paying for time, I would love to find a source where everybody could be paid. I don't know who's paying for it yet.
That would be awesome.
Yes. Where everybody could get paid. Mm-hmm. And I would love to prioritize teaching in the clinical environment so that people don't feel burned out. Like, I don't have time for a student. I would love to say, you work in an 8-hour shift. The last hour and a half is just for teaching.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, you're going to see all your patients and then we're going to block out your schedule. I know that's a hard sell because that means an hour and a half, no income is coming in, but I would love to prioritize it to where that's built into the day and built into the budget.
Mm-hmm.
I think that would also help people be more willing to be a preceptor or mentor.
Yeah. I love that. When I have mentees with me, and we are going to home visits, I require them to come to my house and ride with me to and from so we can pre-brief there and debrief back. And that way it gives us built-in time. It's not causing me extra time. We're already doing it. And I can prepare them if it's somebody I've seen before. And then we have time in the car to ask all the questions and why I did what I did or what we might do different. So that's just a little something somebody can try if they want to.
Yeah, I think that's really smart.
Yeah.
That's smart.
Yeah. Thank you.
Also create, I would love for Lark to create some kind of like repository where we're matching people who are like, if somebody's interested in being after, they just throw their name out there and kind of like how med schools match with students.
Yeah. Well, there is a big list of students looking for internship on one of the really big Facebook groups. She hosts a list there, but there's not enough mentors to meet the need, unfortunately. So yeah, if Lark could come up with a free training and then creating that database, that would be amazing. Mm-hmm. Let me know. I'll help you with that if you need help.
Okay.
All right. Well, Christina, this was amazing as always. Where can everybody learn more about you and all the things you're doing?
Sure. Yeah, I can certainly give you my LinkedIn. I'm happy to answer any questions. I have done some consulting with coalitions and things like that who are trying to get their community more prepared and trained for mentoring. So I'm happy to talk to anybody and share anything. I believe very strongly if we're going to talk the talk of, you know, creating more opportunities for people to become IBCLCs, then we all need to be able to pitch in and make it happen.
Absolutely. Absolutely. All right. Thank you so much
for
spending time with me.
Be sure to like, follow, and subscribe, and check me out on social media at Margaret Salty.